Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 353. I'm one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my sleepy co-host here, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
What's up, man? Nothing much. Just hanging out. I experienced one of those live orchestras this weekend. Watched Harry Potter, The Sorcerer's Stone. The live orchestra. I highly recommend it if you ever get the chance. I know they do it with Lord of the Rings all the time.
So they play the movie while they were doing the orchestra?
Yeah. So it was a big screen movie, and all the music's cut out, and some of the scenes, like the bass is dropped on the scene so you can hear the orchestra. But they did something really cool in the first movie. There's a scene where they find out that the three-headed dog Fluffy is like guarding a door, and someone enchants like a harp to play it so they can like put the dog to sleep, and they like removed that harp music from the movie and had just the harp player in the orchestra playing that part. Like, and it was awesome.
That sounds really dope, actually.
Yeah, they did a lot of, and dude, you don't realize because it's John Williams music, but like even like the subtle moments in the movies, like where the music's like in the background, because there's parts where they pause where there's no music in the movies, but like even the subtle parts, you're watching the violinist's hands, and they're just going like doing crazy scales, like, and it just does that like subtle, like, you don't, if you like go back and you listen to Harry Potter, it has like this in the background, and it's just like the violin's going crazy, and I'm like, man, like they need to ice their hands after that or something. Like, that's crazy.
Orchestra musicians in movies. They are to movies what colorists are to comics.
Yeah, not appreciated.
Not appreciated enough, yeah. But like they make everything.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. So it was a cool experience. Before we get into anything else, we do have an interview today. Our friends from Ahoy will be here. Ahoy Comics, Tom Pear, Stuart Moore coming back. We're going to talk about some stuff. What's going on with Ahoy? So happy to have them back or returning.
So stoked for that one.
Yeah. Love those guys. But yeah, it was a good time. Didn't read a lot of comics, but that was worth it to go see that. I am excited to talk about Delicious in Dungeon because you got me onto that. And that's right up my alley. It's such a great show. Yeah. We'll talk about it a little bit later, but it was pretty great.
Did you catch up to episode 3?
I finished episode 2.
Okay.
I have not caught up to episode 3.
Okay. No. When we get to that, we'll talk more. But yeah. That show, so much fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, other than that, I still haven't organized my comics. They're still out and about. Got to start working on that a little more.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that done this week. Actually, you said you didn't read that much. I was going to make the joke that I pulled a mic this week, and I didn't read that much either.
Dude, it's tough because I was traveling for work, and usually if I can leave like before the comics come out, I can like just have them downloaded on my tablet and like be ready. But like all the running around I do in between, and it, like I left on a Tuesday, came back on a Thursday, so I was just like, it didn't work out.
Well, it's so. This week's been really busy, I literally didn't grab my comics until yesterday as we're recording this. Something I always kind of laughed at, like before I started working out and everything, where people would tell you like, oh, you have so much more energy afterwards and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You break your body and you feel better and have more energy.
Makes sense.
I'd rather be fat and, but it's true.
What?
And really? Wednesday, not only did I work late, but then I went and gave blood, which I tried to do every so often because I have that O positive. I have that good shit.
Yeah, he's got the good.
Yeah.
That everybody wants.
So not only can you not work out when you do that,
yeah,
because you're supposed to like chill.
Yeah.
But it literally, they drain you of blood, Mike. So that afternoon, I was so exhausted.
Yeah.
That I got home and fell asleep on my couch, which I don't do.
Yep.
And then the next day, which is normally my rest day, and to keep my schedule going, I kept it my rest day. I just felt out of it all day.
Yeah.
and then had to work late.
You're missing a liter of blood.
Yeah, I'm missing a liter of blood, and I didn't work out, so you know my energy was gone.
Yeah, low energy. Well, hopefully you're getting that hemoglobin back or something like that. I don't know. Yeah,
it's really all back now. I just got my track marks all over my arm.
There you go. Snapping bands after work. You know,
I was telling everybody how much heroin I did.
Yeah, lovely. They're like, wow, you're surprisingly upbeat for someone who's addicted to that shit.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Did you know Chris was a tweaker? Sometimes I wonder if comics are worse than drugs, but here we are. That was always the running joke at the comic shop, was like people come in fiending, like, I need my Batman issue, man. I need to know what happens.
I've heard it for comics, and I've heard it when I was in the magic scene, which you were in, which is, I don't have money for drugs, I buy comic books, or I don't have money for drugs, I buy magic cards.
I had a conversation with like some guys I was playing magic with at the shop, and I was like, you know, I come from a family, like, everybody loves to go to the casino. And I was like, that's not me. I just, you know, and then I was like, I just like to, buy cards, open the packs, and hope for the best. I'm like, I guess I'm playing the slots too. I just never realized it. I had that realization in front of them, and they're like, oh man. I was like, oh shit.
Oh dude, one of the gifts I won at this company party was a scratch off.
Yeah.
And it was a $2 scratch off, right?
Yeah.
And I won $2, and I was so excited. I was like, I actually won.
Dude, that's me. If I'm walking to a casino, I win $20. I'm like, I'm ahead. I'm out.
Yep. I'm out.
Yeah. I'll see you later. Yeah. Go ahead.
Real quick before I jump into it, I want to talk about this. I started playing this game. I played it for a little bit, to be fair, but started playing this game. Have you heard of Pal World?
So I just came back into society today and was reading up on Pal World, which currently has more players than any game on Steam right now. It's over 1 million current players, like more than CSGO, which is insane. But yeah, tell me, break it down for me, because I'm not really so sure that I still understand what it is.
So this is definitely going to be a PC-centric game, but since I don't do PC games, I'm playing on an Xbox.
Is it cross-platform?
I believe so.
Okay, look that up while you're talking.
So, but I just think, just when I explain the style of game, you'll understand why I say it's going to be a PC-centric game.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been described as Pokemon with guns. So obviously I'm in.
Yep.
As I'm playing it, the better description is Rust with Pokemon.
Right.
Did you ever play Rust?
I never played Rust. I played a game called Valheim, which is very similar. I think similar, it's like survival. You're like out and you're like building stuff, right?
Yeah, so it looks like Fortnite.
Okay.
And plays like Rust or Valheim. I never played Valheim, but I'm going to take your word on it.
Yeah.
And then there's just like basically Pokemon running around, and you can capture them.
You can like choose to capture them, right?
Yes, or you can just annihilate them. Like, I don't have a gun yet in the game, which is probably one of the reasons I'm just like not as into it as I could be.
Yep.
But I do have an axe, and I'm just like axing motherfuckers left and right.
I don't choose you. Goodbye.
It's that style of like, and you know, like Minecraft has done it. Like it's been popular recently.
Right.
Where like you start off with nothing, you have to like go grab a few things, and then you make an axe, and then you can chop down wood. And
like a sandbox game, I think they call that, right? Like
Terraria, or survival game. I've heard it that way.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but I haven't got far enough to have like an actual opinion of it.
So
it's also in early access.
Yep.
So
it's very positive with like 32,000 reviews right now.
Yeah.
I will say, from what I've seen too, and people talk about it, like it's like you can have the Pokemon, you can choose to fight with the Pokemon, or you can have them like run your farm. So people are like running farms like Factorio, which is like you're making assembly lines of the Pokemon, and like you can have your own base. And I'm like, that's insane. But I did see someone running around with like a machine gun and like the Pokemon holding machine guns. And I was like, what the fuck is happening?
So I got far enough where like you start building a base.
Yeah.
And you can have them because, you know, there's a checklist of things they tell you to do. And it's like it's very early access and like the UI is not great.
Yep.
And they give you the checklist. And one of them is like, you know, catch this this pal is what they call them, and then bring him to the base, and he'll guard the base for you, and you'll just see him running around. And the base is very much like, this is the center of the base. You build this thing, and then there's just a giant like orb around your area, and as you build more, it kind of expands.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I just have it set for single player because I don't like people, so I don't need them running around fucking my shit up.
Yeah.
But you can set up like you and a bunch of our friends could just like have a server together, mm-hmm. if you want. And you can set it up so people can just join your server if you want.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. I think it'd be more fun if like multiple people were in a server together and we were like running around like being idiots.
Yeah, that's what I think. I'm thinking about buying it tonight because I did see that somebody ran it. Somebody ran it on the Steam Deck.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have, and I like always have to check like with games now, if like, okay, is it worth it for me to buy it if it's on the Steam Deck? Like, yeah, okay, then I'm gonna buy it, because I'm like, I usually play that more than my PC now, because I'm like, I could lay on the couch with my Steam Deck. But I've thought about like just starting a character on a server and then like inviting people when they like eventually get the game, because I feel like this is going to be a game a lot of people are into.
Yeah, I'm just playing it alone for now to learn it, because I kind of hate these types of games where you get it and then you get into a server and everybody else knows what they're doing and they're like, oh, we're doing this. I'm like, I don't even know, like, how do I get my axe out?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, interesting game.
Yeah. And but the I do like the idea of like the Pokemon games where the people are building upon it with like indie developers and like changing things, making them better and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like that. There's, because it's been talked about in the Pokemon community for a while, like there's this renaissance of like people taking the idea and finally building on it.
Mm-hmm.
Where like nobody was doing anything with that idea, with the exception of Digimon, which was doing it poorly.
Yeah.
And now a bunch of these smaller developers are trying it, and I'm really loving it. Like, Pokemon will always be in my heart, but I kind of don't like the direction Pokemon's going.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the last game was okay. I mean, they kind of half-assed what we always wanted, is basically how I put it.
Right.
But now we got, like I'm really digging Cassette Beasts, and Temtem was a lot of fun. I was into that for a while.
I never played that, but yep.
Nexomon was really good. If you want just like a story-based RPG, that's good. So there's a bunch out there now, and I'm really happy because it's a great formula, and it was really weird that just nobody was trying it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great that they're doing stuff with it now. So. All right, we'll talk about the news, I guess. James Gunn's new DC Cinematic Entertainment Universe has added another actor of the Creature Commandos animated series. Anya Chalotra, best known for playing Yennefer in the Witcher series, will voice Circle. Circle is a character who flipped from a villain to hero many times in DC Comics, has strong ties to Wonder Woman. That's awesome. I think she's a great actress. She killed it in the Witcher series for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, across from Henry Cavill. I think her story arc was very interesting in the show too. So that's awesome. And we know, I mean, we've already heard that these characters are going to be pushed into the live action as well, so eventually.
Yeah, so this says to me, because remember, so her origin, like real world origin in terms of the character, like how the character created, comes from Homer's Odyssey, and it's been a long time since I read Homer's Odyssey, Mike, so
forgive me
that I don't remember all of it, but it comes from that, like Greek mythology, and that's the connection to Wonder Woman. And her first appearance was, I think, Wonder Woman 37. I was reading this earlier. But that says that there's big Wonder Woman connections, which makes me happy, because I would like to see, like, that first Wonder Woman movie, with the exception of the fact the ending kind of negated everything, but was really good. And I want to see that character brought into the cinematic universe and done really well. So, and especially if they really hone in on the mythology, the Greek mythology part of her backstory, like, that'd be cool. So,
you mean Cersei? It's Cersei, right? Yeah.
Or Circle. Oh, did I write it wrong? I must have.
Yeah, not Circle. So, Circle. Sorry. So, sorry, everybody. Circle is actually a comic book series that I was confused because what you said about Wonder Woman is true, because there's a comic series called The Circle. It was like a 4-issue series written by Gail Simone, but this is Circe. So yeah, there is the Greek ties to mythology, which makes a lot more sense because she's like a queen. And I don't know much more besides that, but I think Circe is another character kind of like Yennefer, where she's very imposing and has a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And like is going to be probably a staple within the group. So picking an actress like her who's been doing such a great job, I think is a good idea.
Yeah. And then she obviously won't age being god of some sort. So
yeah,
you don't have to worry about, you can just model the animated character after the actress and then,
yeah,
there you go.
And then you're good to go.
I must have misheard you, because I was reading about it earlier and I put down Circe.
Yeah.
And I, yeah.
But then I'm an idiot because I read straight from the notes that say circle. So like we both fucked up here, everybody. So it's just
autocorrect strikes again.
Yeah. Yeah. Google Docs is like, you wanted circle, not Circe. You don't want to talk about mythology. You just want to talk about shapes. Yeah. That's all. We don't have the knowledge to talk about anything other than circles and squares.
Strikes again.
But no, I think it's a great character to bring in. I like the ties of the gods and stuff like that. And I just want to see Superman already, you know?
I think it's also just Marvel did Thor. Marvel has claimed Norse mythology.
Yeah.
Now, I know DC has tried Norse mythology a few times and done it successfully in some ways. So since Marvel's claimed that, jump in on Greek mythology before they got a chance. I mean, I know everybody's going to say, you know, the last Thor movie had all the gods and everything, but like, in all honesty, you can really claim mm-hmm. Greek mythology in the DC extended universe.
Oh, hell yeah. 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 They already had Ares and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Started watching Delicious in Dungeon first couple episodes. Absolutely love it. Probably one of my favorite animes because it, like you said, combines D&D and like cooking and the whole Japanese like tone of like really focusing on the food and the flavors and how to cook things. I think it's awesome. Plus like the D&D shit of like, okay, how far down in the dungeon do we go? And like they list the monsters that they'll see and like the types of like, even like the people that they interact with. It's just awesome. It's just the like head of the group is like a joke. So I think that's funny too. I'm really enjoying the show. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. In episode 3, they jump into like the idea of resurrection a lot. I know mm-hmm. they mentioned a few times in previous episodes, but this is like the lead guy talks about the first time using the dungeon and like how he got his sword mm-hmm. and all this. And then like just casually is like, yeah, it's the first time I died.
Yeah. They mentioned that a couple times in the first episode. They're like, oh, I don't know if they've like been revived or something like that. And it was like, oh, so this is kind of like D&D.
Well, yeah, because the whole premise of the show is like, go back in the dungeon and get her body.
Yeah.
So that we can resurrect it.
Yeah.
And then the big thing here, so he gets it, his sword and everything, by fighting living armor.
Okay.
Yeah, so the whole episode revolves around living armor. And it's really funny because the main character, like, he's had this secret obsession the whole time with, I just want to eat everything in the dungeon.
Yeah.
And it really comes to a point here where he's like, I wonder what living armor tastes like. And everybody in the group, even the dwarf, is just like, bro, it's just like magical armor. Like,
yeah, it's just like, the dwarf is such an awesome character.
Yeah.
But that's hilarious. Yeah, because he does say that, like, oh, there's living armor here. And it's like, dude, it's just going to be metal.
So it's a great battle scene with them like fighting living armor. And then like mm-hmm. the different, whenever they like break it apart, it just like forms back together.
Oh, and they're cool.
They're convinced that like some sort of magical being is controlling it. So then the idea becomes, well, it's this magical creature and we can eat the creature, right?
Yeah.
And then he ends up in this other room where he thinks the creature is, and he just finds like a more majestic living armor.
That's awesome.
And that's when he discovers that living armor is a creature.
Oh, man.
And inside it is this like shellfish like creature that forms together and creates basically like muscles.
That's amazing.
And that's how they, yeah. So he is able to eat living armor at the end.
Oh my God.
So they, yeah, they basically create different recipes with shellfish.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's, love this episode. Like, this show is a blast.
It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I just got volume 2 coming in the mail now because I'm like really in the mood for this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, I love the show. I love this, this manga. I'm really excited for everything.
Yeah. I finished Monarch Legacy of Monsters episode 10. So honestly, the best way to watch this show is all 10 episodes, like, back to back. I really enjoyed it. I know there's some people online that are kind of like, followed some Godzilla fan bases that are like, it, like, take it or leave it. But I mean, I think it gives you some cool insight into like the legendary universe of monsters. You know, we find out the monsters travel through these portals in the ground, and like part towards the end of the show, the characters get transported in the portals. And we find out like Kurt Russell is supposed to be 90 years old, but he's really like 60 to 70 because he fell in the portal. And like, you could be stuck in the portal in the other world for 1 to 2 days, but it like, you know, makes time pass on Earth like 30 or 40 years. So there's a lot of characters dealing with that stuff. There's a lot of character reveals, but the big reveal was like the, you know, a bunch of characters are trapped in the other world, and to like get back to Earth, they have to call a kaiju like through the portal for it to open up so they can transport through. So they're like calling a kaiju and they get Godzilla to come through the portal, but also the kaijus are like attracted to the device they're using. So like, we get this, I believe it's Batra. It's like a version, like a version of Batra that shows up, which is like a giant bat kaiju, and Godzilla,
the one that fights Batman in the comic.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And like him and Godzilla fight, like, it like for, I don't know. It's not that long of a fight, but it's like epic of like him and Godzilla just like duking it out. He like fucking, you know, rips his wings off and stuff. And it was epic and totally worth it. And then like, by the end, you find out that Monarch isn't so bad, but like spinning out of Monarch is Apex, that we learn about that in the King of Monsters movie. They're the ones working on the Mechagodzilla program, but they're also like, they're the show ends with like, they're, it's 2015 now, I think, and I think we're in like the current timeline for the monster movies now, but they're on Skull Island, and then like King Kong shows up like in the woods. So they have, Apex has a base like on Skull Island, and like King Kong is around, so they're gonna do something with King Kong. I think that kind of takes place like when they, because one of the movies got Godzilla versus Kong, they like trap him, so it has to take place around then sometime. But it was a cool overall season.
So do you think this is a one and done, like there won't be a second season? Or
it might be also to note, one of the co-creators and writers of the script is, I can't think of his name, had the really good Hawkeye run, Matt Fraction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forgot to tell you, Matt Fraction is one of the co-writers, like, creators of the show, yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, so I was like, that's why I kind of stuck with the show. I'm like, this is going to have a good payoff. I feel like he's going to handle the show fairly well, and no, I thought he did a great job. Yeah his name is like at the front of every episode. So
oh cool, that gets me a little more excited. I'll definitely be jumping into this soon.
Yeah it's really good. Definitely worth a watch. But all right, everyone, we're gonna jump over to this interview with Mr. Tom Pear and Stuart Moore from Ahoy Comics, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we've got two very special guest for y'all this week. Returning guest, Tom Pear of Ahoy Comics, and newbie to the show, but often loved on the show, Stuart Moore of Ahoy Comics. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. And thanks for Tom for keeping his clutter out of the camera. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, we know Stuart's a collector, that's for sure. No, I'm glad to have you both on the show. We're big fans. Stuart, I'm glad to have you here for the first time. And I guess we'll get it over quick, the paddling, as we call it. But if you want to just give a little insight or the just how you got involved with comics, where it all began for you. And we don't, you don't have to spend too much time, but if you want to, I don't know.
Well, I've got about four origin stories for how I get into comics. So I could probably take up the whole podcast with it, but perfect. I won't.
Tom will love it.
I mean, I always read them. I was always a fan. When I was a kid, I read more DC comics. And as when I was in high school, a friend of mine who I'm still friends with sat me down with piles and piles of Marvel books, and it just blew my mind. It just changed me completely. As an adult, I started out as a book editor at St. Martin's Press, and I did various comics related books. I did a book called The Great Comic Book Artist. I did some collections of comic strips and things like that. And then I got a job at DC the stupidest way possible, which was to answer an ad in Publishers Weekly.
Why is it that no two people have the same story of how they got into the industry?
No.
I think it was Devin Grayson who used to say that's because it's like tunneling, it's like getting out of prison. Every time you dig a tunnel, they plug it up and you have to dig another one. And I think that's really true. So I started at DC like literally a few months after Tom did. And we became friends, and it was in the editorial group run by Karen Berger that became Vertigo a few years later. So we were in on the start of that. So that's basically it.
Yeah. And by you mean like friends with Tom, did he berate you every day? Or
I really think of us as acquaintances.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I don't think you want to be Tom's friend.
He had this really good idea for this Cats in Space book, so I put up with him.
Well, and I will say, though, I had to, as a lot of people do, and as Tom did, really, too, I had to sort of quit to become a writer. And I have been almost full-time a writer for almost 22 years.
Wow.
Nice. Although I still do things like run operations for Ahoy Comics on the side, things like that.
Yeah. I think a great place to start everything is, I mean, Mike and I have been really excited since the birth of Ahoy Comics. I mean, we were kind of in on the ground floor, especially working with your PR firm and like having you guys on the show, reading your books, all that stuff. And it's kind of shocking me that it's 5 years later. So
I can't believe it's been 5 years. Yeah.
How has the first 5 years been? Like, is everything you guys dreamed of, or are you sick of it?
Just sheer hell. It was terrific. We assembled a really good bunch of people who we're all fond of each other, and we all do great work. And if we had known, like, it started with three of us, me and Hart Steele and Frank Camuso had a meeting in like a coffee shop and resolved to start a comic book company. And honestly, if we'd known how hard it would be, we wouldn't have done it. But it's kind of great that we didn't know and that we did it. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance is bliss, I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's been a tremendous experience, and it's to just interacting with all these creative people and writing again more than I used to, and that's great. I've loved it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been an interesting experience, like, because I've learned to do all kinds of things I've never done before, like dealing with distributors, keeping schedules, stuff like that. I think, Tom, you originally called me and asked me if I wanted to edit The Wrong Earth. And I was like, I don't really want to edit books anymore. And then at the beginning, we had a lot of help from a guy named Sven Larsen, who's a VP at Marvel now, who did a lot of our production and marketing right at the very beginning. And when he got the call from the show, as they would say on Bull Durham, when he went back to Marvel, I sort of moved into the operations position. And so I do that in addition to my own books. But yes, the way Ahoy works, as Tom says, is remarkably smooth. And it showed me that there's an incredible talent pool of people in all parts of the comics industry who, for one reason or another, don't care to work for the big companies or have kind of been through there, but really know their stuff and really and are happy and grateful in a lot of cases to work in a place with a lot less red tape, like where you can just get things done. A lot of what happens at Ahoy is just Tom and me getting on the phone, just a lot of it. Yeah. We always figure out if there's a problem, we always figure it out. Like it's easier than you think.
Yeah, sometimes we figure it out really fast. Yeah.
That's great that you have that like relationship that it kind of worked out that way. Stuart, you said, writing and then working with distributors and things like that. Is there ever a moment where you're like, oh shit, like I need to finish this up, or like this isn't going to make it for distributors? Do you ever see like a push pull there for stuff you're working on, or is it like?
Yeah. I do have some help. We have other good people working in the company, but yes, I do have a back and forth like that. I've been writing Marvel novels the last few years as well. Mm-hmm. I had one out last spring called Into the Dark Dimension.
Yep.
And that can get a little intense when it's getting near deadline time or if they need revisions. But in general, what I try to do is I try to write in the morning and do the Ahoy work in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And the universe doesn't always oblige me, but that's kind of how it works best for me. And I'm a pretty organized person. Sometimes I just have to take, actually the last few days I've just been doing Ahoy, because it's just, there's a whole lot of little stuff happening. But generally that works out pretty well. I can also caffeine myself up in the morning better and get some writing done then.
Yeah. Just power through the writing part.
Yeah.
Because Chris is a big fan here, we gotta talk about the Captain Ginger and how that all came about. Was that just an idea that you had, Cats in Space, or how did that get going?
Captain Ginger is actually the only comic I've ever created for a specific artist, because I had been working with June Brigman on a comic called The 99, which was produced for the overseas market. It was published here in some small ways, but it was primarily produced for the Middle East. Mm-hmm. June was not the only artist on it, but she was sort of the primary artist and would design the characters. And at one point we were working on a little side project for them. I think it was a promotional like comic for a bank or something. And I wrote in something with a cat sanctuary in it, which they have in some countries over there. And June just drew the hell out of it. She just drew cats everywhere, every one of them with a different personality, cats fighting, cats climbing, cats everywhere. And I thought, there's something here. Yeah, wait a minute. After that was over, I just sort of came up with it. And I went to her and said, do you want to do this? And this was several years before Ahoy. I think we started working on this in 2014. I looked it up recently.
Oh, wow.
We played around with it for a little while. She did some sample pages. She thought about coloring it, but couldn't really keep up the speed on that. We were going to do it as a Kickstarter. We weren't sure what to do with it. And then Ahoy came along, and it just seemed to fit into the line really nicely. So that's pretty much what happened.
Wow. Yeah.
That's... Yeah. Was it always the idea to like have the cats be... Because what I found interesting about this is a lot of times when you see like these animals in space things, they're really just people in space, but they want to do animals to make it different. And this, like, to fly the ship, they have to use the scratching post and like stuff like, so they're actually cats. That's what I found interesting about it. Was that always the idea, or was there some sort of collaboration there where the artist maybe said this would be really fun to do?
The answer is a combination of both of those things. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was there from the start. The little cozies they have to put on the levers in order to manipulate them with their claws. That was my idea, I think. But June added all sorts of things. She added, she was the one who really started drawing little cats everywhere, like little kittens all over the place. And I had to sort of figure out how that worked, like with the backstory, like why are there so many? And there are actually there's some details to that I've never been able to entirely fit into the story. But so it was a little bit of both. From the beginning, I wanted them to be cats. I think in the first issue, I looked at it recently, and I tried to be probably in a weak ass way, but I sort of tried to make it a little harder. Like I tried to have them almost swearing a little bit, things like that. Cause I wanted to establish from the beginning that this was not just a funny animal book sort mm-hmm. of. But then actually as it went along, that didn't seem to be necessary at all. It was pretty obvious what the characters were, what the series was. And I think it became more of an all ages story, just sort of organically as I went along.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun as Thanks. A series too. Yeah.
Thanks. It's my favorite thing to write. It really is.
It's great. Awesome. We'll definitely, cause I know Mike wants to talk about some Wrong Earth, so we'll get to Tom, but is that something that, as long as people are interested in doing it, you would love to do more, or have you found like kind of a conclusion to what you've done with it?
The two issues that came out recently under the title The Last Feeder kind of close off the first cycle of the series. I have plans that are not necessarily in comics form for the series, but I'm putting all that together now, and we'll have to see how it all comes together. I own the property with June. I consult with her on everything, and we've also been talking about something else we want to do, a new project, but that's in very early stages too.
Cool.
Yeah, since Chris gave me the nice segue, Tom, I've been the big
professional.
Yeah, the big Wrong Earth fan since the beginning here. And I know, I think I finally got Chris into it last year, right, Chris? At some point, yeah.
Yeah, I read the first volume.
Because
I end up, even though we get, you guys are nice enough for us to review codes, mm-hmm. I went and bought a bunch of the trades. So I bought that, My Bad.
Yep.
What was the other one?
Billionaire Island, maybe?
No, High Heaven.
High Heaven. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and Chris and I talked about, all the stories you guys are doing, there's usually a sense of like, wow, this is a lot of fun to read. Which we kind of see we're missing in maybe the big two sometimes. But I will say Wrong Earth was always a favorite of mine, and we got the latest couple issues. And now we get the announcement about Dead Ringers, another 5-issue series. So can you talk about that a little bit, Tom? Cause that's got me excited. Yep.
You're mixing up, Mike, cause there was a new Wrong Earth announced, but Dead Ringers is a separate book.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, Tom, then lay it out for me.
No, Wrong Earth, Dead Ringers is the next.
Oh, is it? I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris is wrong. Okay. See, I told you I'm the Wrong Earth fan. So yeah, Dead Ringers is the 5-issue series. Sorry. Yeah. So give me the load.
Oh, Dead Weights is the other book, isn't it?
Yeah. Dead Weights and Dead Ringers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're good.
Dead My Weights bad, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So, Wrong Earth, Dead Ringers. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
It's just turned into this sort of like mad version of Gilligan's Island, where at the beginning of every series, somebody else is stuck on another planet somewhere.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like if they got off the island and just kept getting shipwrecked on other islands.
And if it keeps happening, that's fine.
So it's a way to mix up the cast. And we have mm-hmm. some people on Earth Alpha now who should be there, which is the campy version of the Earth. Just to backtrack, I'll just give the premise is that there's a particular superhero who is in two different worlds of the multiverse. And in one of them, he's sort of like a campy old fashioned comics code era hero. And in the other, he's like a stick it to the man, kind of ultra violent post comics code hero. And so in the first Wrong Earth, they got trapped on each other's Earths. And I'd like to go back and do more stories about that because I left some time in there to do it.
That'd be cool.
And it's kind of the purest expression of the book when they're just trapped on each other's. But now coming up on Dead Ringers, most of the people who should be on Earth Alpha are back there now, but both Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man are there. There's a couple heroes who shouldn't be there. They're badass Earth Omega heroes mm-hmm. who have to. Now, Dragonfly, the dark Omega guy, really kind of I think it's subtext that you can see, but he really enjoyed his time on Earth Alpha. Mm-hmm. Because it was just so much less trouble, so much less pressure. And he had a hard time fitting in at first, but he really learned to love it. And but with Dragonfly Man there kind of calling the shots, he hates it now. And he just hates his life.
Yeah.
And so, and we've got a couple heroes just separated out, kind of lost in space. And Lady Dragonfly Man and Night Sting, who are just
Night Sting
variations of variations.
Yeah, I love Night Sting.
And we've got a bad dragonfly still running around the multiverse from the Night and Day series.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you've done with the series, because, you know, you do like the 5 issues and then you're like, okay, maybe we'll get another story. I'm hoping we get another story. But like, if we didn't, I mean, this on its own was just a great thing to have. But, and then you, I think it was last year we talked to you about how you gave off some one shots for people to work on mm-hmm. within the universe.
Stuart was one of them.
Yeah, Stuart was one of them. And how was that, giving it off to, like, I mean, Stuart, you could talk about your story that you wrote, but I mean, was that fun for you to, like, give the characters, you know, other people to play with those characters?
It was. I mean, a great bunch of writers too.
Yeah. Stuart, oh yeah.
Gail Simone and Mark Russell. And
Mark Russell. Yep.
And it was really.
Did Mark Waid do an issue?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, Mark Waid. Yep.
Yeah, he did. His was, in terms of sensibility, I wasn't surprised. His was the closest to what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing the variations. I mean, Stuart did this Batman 89 thing.
Yeah, that was really fun.
With a villain based on Prince, which is just wonderful.
Yeah, that was a great issue.
The art was stellar.
Yeah. I love that you laid down so few rules for them, and like, and the one shots wound up very different from each other. Like some of them, like Gail Simone had a lot of fun with just an Archie comic style style universe, but Mark Waid's and Mark Russell's were both just sort of within your parameters. Like they were both sort of just wrong Earth stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Russell, by the way, I think is one of the darkest things he's ever written. Like it was really,
really.
Yeah.
He violated the character too. I mean, he had Dragonfly Man acting that he never would. But I thought, I just like, all right, it's Bob Haney time.
And you, I mean, Stuart, you got to play with the character. So, I mean, that, like you said, the Prince type character was a lot of fun to read, but like, is that the idea you had going into it? Like, I wanted to do something a little bit crazier, a little bit out of what Tom is normally doing with the characters, or?
Yeah. And it was inspired by particularly the first Michael Keaton Batman movie,
right? Which
had the Prince soundtrack.
Yep.
But it was also inspired by the Prince soundtrack, which has a whole other entire set of stories embedded in it that people have talked about. Like it's really wild stuff. The other thing though I really like was I wanted to get into Richard Fame, the alter ego of the Dragonflies, in the context of the 1980s when you know, stock market guys were revered, greed is good, all that, and what kind of moral dilemmas would a character like that face in that environment, in that time period. Mm-hmm. So, I think I wound up with a character almost a little bit in between the two characters you have, which I guess chronologically makes sense, but he had a somewhat different set of dilemmas and parameters he was operating in. That sounds boring. It was fun. There's a lot of shooting and people getting doped up and things like that. I had a lot of fun with it. And Fred Harper drew it. He had a great time with the psychedelic sequence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Fred Harper did a great job.
He's so good at that.
And I think that's another testament to those characters. And that's the type of book where you can have other people come in and be like, oh, man, this would be so much fun to write just an offshoot story about these characters. I mean, you have a multiverse to play with. All these different worlds and different styles. So I think it's awesome when you did that, because it still lends itself to the overall universe. And I thought it was just a nice, and for me, I was like, oh, this is probably, you know, the last we'll ever see of these characters. But now that we got a couple more of the 2 issues and now the 5 issues, I'm pretty excited to see the,
where yeah, gonna go. We'll keep doing it as long as we can. I mean,
nice.
That's my favorite thing to write.
Awesome.
And Jamal, I always have to mention how much.
Oh, the art is so good.
I mean, it's like the energy is, you would not believe how much worse it would be without him. Like the ideas he brought in improved it so much.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And of course the energy he just brings to the artwork is insane.
Yeah. I mean, the style and some of those pages are just, I mean, with the first series, that's what really brought me into. I was like, I mean, it's a fun story, but that art was just between the two worlds. It was just like, man, it really just fits the book.
His devotion to it has just been exceptional. I mean, we probably do it more often if he didn't also want to draw other things, which he has a perfect right to do, and he should do.
Right.
And it'll certainly extend the period before he gets bored with us.
Very cool. Yeah. Cool. And then I think we have to bring it up. Dead Weight, #1. Chris and I talked about this book on the show when it got announced, but for us, so just the premise here that we always love the idea of like the henchmen and like what the hell they're up to when they're not like on the clock or, you know, working for somebody. So, you know, where did this come
from? I always go back to like Venture Brothers.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you watched that.
Yep.
But there's always these henchmen that kind of like, they also have a side life and they talk about it. And they're just people who like collecting a paycheck. And like, but nobody, like Marvel plays with it here and there, but not really. And I just, when this was announced, I was so excited because I'm like, I love this idea of like, who's crazy enough to be like the Joker's henchman? Like, who's crazier, the guy who's the henchman for the Joker or the Joker?
Yeah, right. Like, well,
you see these like awesome like AIM headquarters, Advanced Idea Mechanics headquarters. It's this magical looking Kirby building, but you never see any parking. There's like 800 guys in beekeeper outfits out there, but there's no parking lot.
The apartments are underneath.
Yeah.
Deadweight was pitched to us by the writer Tyrone Finch, who's a television writer. We've worked with him before. He's also done work with Humanoids and a few other places. It's pretty much his baby. One of the things I love about it, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying this, is the henchmen have not been the two main characters. It's just sort of a buddy comedy, really. And the two main characters are not treated very well by either their bosses or the heroes. Like they've kind of been screwed over by everyone. So that's the starting point. They're just two guys in the gig economy, really trying to make it work.
I love the idea of a comic book about people who, when things get hard, they quit.
Yeah, we can all relate to that.
Yeah, that's pretty early in life.
I have to say, while we're talking about this, Tom himself once wrote a brilliant issue of Batman 66 called The Joker's Layoff Riot, which was about exactly this. It was the Joker decides to, he decides to save money. Is that what it is? So he just starts.
Yeah, he's in a bad mood, and he cheers up when he watches business news, and it's all about layoffs and downsizing. He decides to downsize his gang.
Wonderful.
And there's like one gang member left who has to do everything while Joker watches him work.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. Yes.
No, he screws everything up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that story.
There's
a formula that they used in the 40s and 50s where Joker would always start out unhappy about something, and then he would see something that would give him an idea. There's actually one where he went to a baseball game, like he was pissed at his gang and they weren't getting anything right, so he goes to a baseball game and he realizes gangs could trade henchmen, like baseball teams trade players.
Oh yeah,
there was a whole story about
that. There was an actual story about that.
They're up for free agent.
I love that formula where the Joker's just pissed and then it's an idea.
It almost feels like the editors thinking about like how they hate all their writers and they hate all their artists and they just want to really? They're gonna leave the office and just go to the baseball game and figure it out themselves.
Yeah. And swap between people.
That would be a good skit, like a fantasy or like a draft for the henchmen. It's like, all right, Joker, it's your turn.
Yeah.
Who do you want? Drafted by him.
Well, he only put up 20 points this week. I'm not going to draft
him. I don't know. This guy can barely pick a lock. I don't know. Yeah. I need someone who can really make that Joker gas.
50s Joker, I would work for.
Yeah. 50s Joker.
I don't know. He gets cranky.
He gets cranky, but, you know, he's not going to cut your face off.
Yeah, I was going to say this current iteration, I want to keep my face on.
Yeah.
I don't need it pulled off. Yeah, I know Chris and I are very excited. It's a 6-issue series, correct? It's in
Deadweights. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And you said it's more of like a buddy cop comedy style story of this them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cops specifically.
No, yeah. I mean, buddy comedy. Like yeah.
Almost like a traveling buddy comedy where they, but there are a lot of twists and turns too involving the hero group. So that I don't want to give away, but
okay.
So it is within that whole world. But yeah, it's basically about these two guys and they can't get a break. They can't.
Well, it's funny and absurd. And it's also really, it's really got a heart. I mean, it's got feeling in there that I think elevates it. Yep. And the friction between the two characters, one of them is all in on quitting crime and the other one's not so sure.
Right. So you have that funny dynamic to play with too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the art too, by Sebastian Paris is, it's really good. That
it's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. The cover where the guys just all beat to crap. It's pretty good. It's like, yeah, I got to go into work the next day. What the hell?
Sebastian colors his own work too, and his color sense is gorgeous. Like he's really good with a palette.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you guys, I mean, you have so many books coming out. I believe Mike just read Acid Chimp versus Business Dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
I need to jump into Project Cryptid because that's right up my alley. Black Myth coming out. Now I know, or is coming out, but I know I don't expect anyone to announce anything today, but obviously more books are coming. We've talked about kind of your philosophy on doing books, and I'm a big fan of how you guys are doing it. I've put some of these, I hate saying smaller publishers because it sounds derogative, but like, you know, I think you understand what I mean when I say that, and keeping your output tight. And just trying to put out quality, and it seems to be what you guys are doing. I mean, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 And then doing them in seasons. So maybe, I mean, like Mike said, he's always getting a mini series for Wrong Earth, and he gets a new season every year or so. And then something like Dead Weights, like maybe it goes on for two or three seasons, but maybe it's just one and we move on to the next thing. Have you guys noticed more people jumping in? Because I really noticed a shift for you guys from the outside looking in. You can tell me if I'm wrong here, but when the Second Coming thing happened, and I know, Tom, we talked about it at the time, so we don't have to dig deep into that, and Mark Russell jumping on board, and it seems like then like Black Myth came and now we've got Dead Weights, and are more people kind of jumping in being like, man, I would really love to do something with Ahoy.
Yeah. We got Matt Boers writing Justice Warriors.
Yep. Justice Warriors. I read Justice Warriors. I completely forgot. Yeah. That's a great series. Yep.
Great stuff there. I love that book.
Yep.
And we have a couple things coming up that are really exciting and we can't tell you about, but they sort of raise the game for us.
Okay.
And I wish I could talk about them because they're great.
It doesn't. I will tease it. It will include our first licensed property, which we've stayed away from so far. This one actually came in through the writer, so it was more interesting to us that way. That's all I can say about it right now. But it'll be. I think it'll get some attention.
Is it? I don't, once again, I don't expect you to tell me what it is or announce it or anything, but is it kind of like what happened with Mad Cave and Dick Tracy, where the people who had the IP were like, we want to make this book, and then got it through with them?
It's not exactly that, but no. I can't clarify too much.
Okay. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. But
it's more like the writer was dying to write this and started to lay the groundwork for us.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a writer we know and have worked with. So it happened very organically that way.
Yep.
And we were lucky that the property owner was interested.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to speculate in the next episode, Chris.
Yeah, we're gonna spend an hour.
That's our news for next. No, we won't. But we'll speculate the hell out of it. No,
I don't know.
Stuart, look me in the eyes. Is it Rom?
Rom? No.
Yeah, wait, not, over here. There it is. Yeah, boom.
Yeah, not Rom, Chris. I'm sorry.
when you find out who it is, I don't know if you'll say, but of course, or what.
Yeah. Which is better to you?
Yeah.
I'll take either.
As long as they buy the book.
Because I think that's another thing with a lot, and I hate to keep comparing you, but like I put you in a similar bag as like a Mad Cave, where like when you guys announce something, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah,
I don't think I know what an Ahoy book is, really, other than just quality. Like, I haven't read a bad Ahoy book.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing. But
I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. I think quality's a big part of it. And another big part of it is they don't have to be comedies, but they can't be humorless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Always a sense of fun.
Always got to be a vein of humor running. Mm-hmm. It, I think, because that to me is just sheer entertainment.
But
yeah, and I think when you first launched Ahoy, we talked about it, how you wanted it to be humor in some way, and at mm-hmm. first it was really just humor books or books with humor in it. And I think that's one thing that Mike and I have really pushed towards, because we've talked a lot over the years about, as much as we love our, you know, The Dark Knight Returns and these really serious great books that push the medium, it's also kind of fun just to watch Batman Joker have a surfing contest every so often. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Right. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I will say I've definitely read more, and not just because of the review stuff, but I have definitely read more Ahoy comics that, like, if it looks like a genre that I won't typically go for, you at least know it's going to be fun. And I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the book right now, but it was like the time traveling. Grandmother. What was
Guilt.
It? Guilt. Yeah, Guilt. That one. That was such a fun story. That was something that like I picked up, and I know we talked about it on the show and stuff, but I picked that up, and I was like, yeah, this was just a lot. Like the story was wild. It was just a lot of fun.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. I loved it too.
Yeah. So, we're just really, you know, our check's in the mail. No, I'm just kidding. But no, we always do say good things about Ahoy. My t-shirt's in the closet. I forgot to wear it for the interview, but, I can't wait to see what's coming up in the rest of the year with you guys. So looking forward to it for sure. Yeah. But yeah. And Stuart, I'm so glad you got to be here today for your first time. So hopefully you'll come back and join us again for another time.
As long as I don't have to do the paddle again.
Yeah, not the paddle. Yeah, that's off. No. That's off air, just folks. One. So
just if you see Mike at a con, just kind of stay away.
Yeah. Is that a general rule or just?
It's general rule. Yeah, yeah.
Listen, I go to a lot of cons with Mike. It's weird. I don't know what's going on, but he's a good guy. I mean, just he says this weird thing he does.
Pandemic was a real relief, huh?
It was. Yeah.
You should have seen him like itching, like.
thanks for shaming me on air, Chris. I appreciate it. Appreciate that. Yeah,
that's how you know it's
out.
Mike.
Now it's out there. Everybody's gonna avoid me now again. I took those few years to build myself back up, and here we go. Tom Stuart, thanks so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to talk with Ahoy.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see what's going on next. So
yeah, before we let you go though, you got all this great stuff coming out. Do you want to share any social media where people can follow you, all that kind of stuff.
I'm umpire on Blue Sky.
Go ahead, Sky.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say Ahoy Comic Mags on Instagram. Ahoy Comic Mags on Twitter X. Yep. Ahoy Comics on Instagram and Comics Ahoy on Facebook. I don't know how all that. We do have a Blue Sky too now. I think it's Ahoy Comics.
Great.
And I'm at I'm Stuart Moore 1 on Facebook and Twitter, and Stuart Moore 01 on Instagram. And I am also on Blue Sky, and I can never remember what it is. I think it's just Stuart Moore or something.
Oh, we're Ahoy Comic Mags on Blue Sky.
Blue Sky, got it.
Okay. Great.
So, yeah, to everybody out there, check out the show notes. I'll have links to Ahoy's website so you can check out all the books that are coming out. They do a great job of telling you what month, what issues are coming out, so you can catch up and check out the back catalog, all that kind of stuff. Because
I should mention, too, we also have our website, which is that's comicsahoy.com. And it's usually up to date with everything, if I remember to update it. but it's in pretty good shape right now.
And that's the website that'll be in the show notes down below. So check that out. Cool. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time. Come chat with us. We really appreciate it. And look forward to the next time we can do it.
Sounds good.
And we're back.
We're back. I mean, we always say good things about Ahoy. Huge fan of the Dragonfly Man and Universe, Captain Ginger, Billionaire Island. What's some other ones? High Heaven.
Second Coming.
All these great show issues.
My Bad.
Bad.
The list goes on.
My Bad. Yeah.
I don't think so. I need to get on Project Cryptid because I was excited for that, and we had all the issues, but life.
Yep.
I'll say this: I haven't read a bad Ahoy book. Mm-hmm. I haven't read all their books, so but I haven't read a bad one.
Yeah. Right.
So. And their fifth anniversary, like a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, go check them out, guys. Yeah. Come on.
Check them out. Skybound has announced their next Universal Monster comic will be Creature from the Black Lagoon. It'll be a four-issue series that acts as a sequel to the original movie, much like the Dracula comic Skybound is publishing. It will be written by Dan Water and Ram V. Oh, with art by Matthew Roberts. Okay, if Ram V is involved, I might have to check it out.
That's really cool. So I'm reading the Dracula one, and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's the Department of Truth team with Tinian, and I forget the artist.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit of a disappointment for me because, you know, love Dracula, love vampires.
Yeah.
I've never seen Creature from Black Lagoon. Have you?
I have not. No, I've not.
So yeah, I almost want to watch it just to see, but I've always loved like the character design for him.
Yeah, he's just an ugly bastard.
Yeah, it's almost like a very, it's a horror. I mean, Swamp Thing is a horror Swamp Thing, but like,
yeah,
you remember the Swamp Thing TV show they did,
like
fairly recently?
Yes. Yep.
I feel like that's Creature from the Black Lagoon inspired.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Like it. It just gives me vibes of this horror creature in the swamp. I don't know, I'm kind of meandering, but I think this is cool and I will probably check it out. Yeah,
and Dave Stewart is on it too, which is great.
Doing them colors.
Yeah, Dave Stewart, Matthew Roberts. No, this looks, it looks cool. I'm a big Ram V fan from doing the Swamp Thing book, so I'll probably check it out even if I don't watch the movie.
Everybody forgive Mike for recording from a construction site. So
yeah, sorry about that. I don't know what the hell's going on.
It happens.
Last week we discussed the end of the current TMNT comic series, and now we have more info as to what's coming next. Report initially made it seem as though the current continuity is being scrapped for a new beginning, but it seems now that they're going to relaunch the brand with a new number one and continue in the current continuity. There is a new writer at the helm of the world, and that is none other than Jason Aaron. Oh my God, Chris.
I thought people were fucking with me when this news came out.
Yeah. Chris is a Turtles fan now, everybody. Huge. Yeah.
there was every issue. Yeah, I think I was on edge last week. Like, I'll probably check out the new Turtles. I don't know. I can say definitively, like, I'm checking out the new Turtles now. Like,
that's crazy. he just controls the universe now of the Turtles to Jason Aaron.
I said this at the time, but when he gave up his Marvel exclusive contract and, you know, finished his run and he moved over to DC, I said part of me was sad because Jason Aaron's this great Marvel writer. I've really loved him over there for a long time, but I get it creatively. Now I really get it. He wasn't going to just go over to DC and just do DC.
No, he's controlling this.
I think he's probably, I don't want to say he's made his money because it's tough in this business to make your money, but he's probably just comfortable and like decided I can do some DC stuff and have some fun over there. And I can just see what else is out there. And somebody probably was like, listen, you know, we're trying to relaunch the Turtles. And he's like, fuck yes.
I'll do the universe. Why not?
Yeah, I'm all over that. So I'm, this went from I'll check it out to I'm legit excited for a new Turtles book. I can't wait to see who they get to do art. And you know, I mean, it's IDW's 25th anniversary this year. Mm-hmm. They're going hard on a lot of stuff. They're really excited to keep this license. You know, this book's coming out with like 50 variant covers. Like, they're just going to go to town.
Yeah. There's going to be like 1,000 covers. I'll probably even pick it up because I'm turning into a Jason Aaron fan now after I read Action Comics. We'll talk about that. But
yeah,
this is super hype. this is great news.
And to anyone out there that doesn't know Jason Aaron, like, first, I just think, check out his work. He's done so much great stuff. His Thor run is really what propelled him to, like, stardom. But his story, man, like, he's one of the only guys in comics to come out of the Marvel talent search. Like, he was just some dude that applied online to this Marvel talent search and then just got to write Wolverine.
Yeah, it's wild. It's insane.
And from what I can tell, he seems like a cool dude and everything. So I'm so excited for this now. Like, meandering, but fucking Turtles. Turtles are on my radar, man.
Yep. Chris has got another book he's got to subscribe to.
Wow. Mike, we get review copies from IDW. Oh, so
yes, we do. We don't have to subscribe. Sick. I'm going to read every issue now. Speaking of reading every issues, I was catching up on some stuff from last week, so we could talk a little bit about that. I read Action Comics 1061. I'm going to be reading Action Comics moving forward now. That's the issue that Jason Aaron took over. Huge, huge fan of what he did with Bizarro, that issue. Some crazy stuff going on between like a Bizarro multiverse, right? So I'm really looking forward to see more of that. I thought he did a great job with his first issue.
Yeah, ton of fun on that issue.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
If I like Bizarro, you know you did a good job.
Yeah. I read Outsiders, I believe it was issue 3, right? That was a great issue, like you said. The multiverse minds of Batman were a lot of fun. I'm liking the series a lot, so I'd like to, you know, talk to Lanzig and Kelly about this. Talk to him about that. Wesley Dodd's Sandman, I think it was issue 4.
Was indeed.
Yeah. Did you read that one?
Yep.
Yeah, solid issue. I'm interested to see where this book ends up, like how it's gonna end. I don't really see like an end point for it. You know what I mean? Like, is it gonna end in a couple issues or?
I agree. So first I want to say, because I was critical of like doing an evil Sandman, because I'm fairly critical of just doing that in general.
Right.
I like the way they twisted it. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy just used that disguise to get the stuff. And that's really, right. He wasn't actually an evil Sandman.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. He was just wanted the stuff.
Yeah. I'm interested in the ending. Like, like, Wesley's just going to fight the U.S. government now.
Yeah, He's like, oh, they have my, yeah, he's like, they have my plans and they're going to use them. I have to, like, I'm like, what are you going to do, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how well you know me, Mike, but that might be a story arc that I could get into.
Yeah. I want to say the art for this issue was fantastic.
Oh, the art throughout the series has been fantastic.
Yeah, this had a lot of splash pages with, like, him breathing in the smoke and stuff. And, like, yeah.
Well, real quick, bring me back to that. But I'm with you. Like, we have two more issues to fight the U.S. government. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be a tough kind of wrap up here, but Venditti can do it. Like, yeah. I trust him.
Mm-hmm.
That sequence where he's in the dream gas,
yeah,
was so well done.
It was insane. Yeah,
when he's like reliving all of his, like, it's something that I hope we all do, or else I'm really weird. But where, like, something pops in your head, like some stupid thing you did like 4 years ago, and you're like, yeah, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes through that in one moment, and I could feel that emotion as I'm going through those panels. It's,
yeah,
it's great.
It was amazing. And then the last book I was catching up on, I haven't finished the issue yet, but I'm like halfway through. I really like it, is Ultimate Spider-Man number one. So I was really enjoying that. Yeah. I like, they catch you up with the maker crap beforehand, like what you've been catching me up on. But, I do like the older Peter Parker, cause I've only gotten to that part of it where you're like learning about the character. And I think I'm going to like this book. I think it feels like a Hickman book. You know, you take the Spider-Man out of it, and it just feels like a Hickman, like, written book.
You can see the building blocks. And I've I can't remember if I said it last week or not, but, like, to me, it feels like the ultimate what-if book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why it appealed. I mean, among just the whole him dealing with being in his 30s, which we're both dealing with.
Yep.
Yeah, like.
No, I thought it's really cool. It's a really interesting concept. Yeah. So I'll probably stick with it. Yeah. Now I'm reading Action Comics and Ultimate Spider-Man. It's like, damn. All right. But that's all I really had. I was catching up on some stuff from last week. I'll probably catch up on everything this week for sure.
Yeah, I'm catching up on a lot. This is way old, but I wanted to bring it up. Mm-hmm. But Star Wars Dark Droids number 5. It's like last month it came out.
Yeah.
But this is the end of like the whole Dark Droid saga. I just caught up on all of it, and I just want to say, like, the whole Dark Droid saga was a blast.
Cool.
And they leave it a little bit open. I think Charles Soule has another event in his mind for Star Wars, and all of his events have kind of connected in some way, kind of like what DC is doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a lot of fun. Dark Droids is good. The only problem with it is it read really well and issues if you're reading Star Wars stuff. I don't think this is going to be a good trade, like graphic novel read, because there's a lot of stuff that, like, if you didn't read D Squad, you're gonna be confused why these guys came in, and if you're not reading Star Wars, you're gonna be confused, like, what, why is Lobot like this and all that, this kind of stuff. But I enjoyed it. So
Awesome.
Quick Stops volume 2, number 2.
Oh, nice.
So we continue the whole, like, origin of the movies thing. And I think I said last time, like, we went full Kevin Smith on this, where it's just an entire book about, like, orgies and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And the first half of this issue continues that trend. While, like, you see kind of the lead character's descent as she's about to get screwed over. Like, it's the ultimate, like, creator story. Kev's telling basically the story of Superman here. Like, they create it. They're kind of on top of the world. They're having fun building this thing. And at the last minute, someone comes in with a contract and basically fucks him over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens here. But there's, like, there's a twist in it that it's, like, her husband doing it to her in this.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying it. It's a good time.
Nice.
Then we talked about those. All right, this week, the only two books I got to was Justice League versus Godzilla vs. Kong.
Oh, nice.
Which is so much fun, Mike. Like, we get more into what's going on. Like, the heroes have a plan. The villains have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to try to do something. We're building up to a big fight here. And we get more of Green Arrow on Skull Island, or Monster Island, whatever island he's on, and what he's doing. We find out the League of Assassins are there, and he has a big fight with them. And then, like, Lex Luthor's building something. So I'm wondering if, like, Lex is building a Mecha Godzilla of some sort.
Oh, please.
Yeah, like, they hint pretty hard that's what it is. So
that'd be amazing.
And then there's this underwater kaiju that comes and attacks Atlantis. So Aquaman asks for help. So it's a very Aquaman-centric issue as well.
Nice.
And the Justice League comes down there and helps him. They end up fighting it, and then Godzilla shows up, and Godzilla fights it. And the fight is starting to hurt the dome around Atlantis, so Arthur's getting really concerned. So they bring out the last line of defense for Atlantis, and they unleash the Kraken.
Nice. Nice.
Awesome issue. That's just an awesome issue.
Yeah.
And you get underwater Godzilla fight, which we don't see a ton of.
You don't see a lot of that. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
And then, of course, I read Avengers Twilight number one.
Of course you had to. Of course.
So I knew the premise of this book. I knew it was Cap-centric. After the first issue, I think the elevator pitch for this is Captain America's Dark Knight Returns.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So we're in the future. Like, the old heroes are all old men at this point. Steve has given up the super soldier serum because of some event that happened that they're referring to as H-Day.
Okay.
And we get glimpses of H-Day, like Spider-Man died. Somehow Ultron's involved. Boston was massacred during it. And throughout that, like, after that happened, like, Cap gave up being Cap. He gave up the serum from his body. He ran for the Senate at one point. Luke Cage plays a big role in this. We get to see Daredevil for a second. Murdoch is back to being a lawyer. And then what's interesting here is H-Day kind of created a fascist state, and that there's surveillance everywhere. Think V for Vendetta. You know, like, surveillance everywhere. There's a curfew. There's cops on the street, but they're in, like, Iron Man-esque armor. We find out that Tony Stark and the Wasp had a kid together, and he's also a part of this fascist state. He creates all the armor. And, like, at one point, he has to go create something, and he goes to the secret room. And we just see, like, a Futurama-esque head in a bottle.
Oh, okay.
And it's Tony Stark. And he just, like, lifts up this thing that was kind of like Cerebro. And just, like, hey, Dad. And it cuts away.
What the hell?
So there's a lot of things happening here. And at the end, we find out there's this resistance group that is run by Luke Cage. And they have recreated the Super Soldier Serum. And Steve volunteers to take it again because he realized things have gone too far.
Yeah.
Of course. Like, the book even opens up with Steve talking to himself about, you know, like, it's him waking up and him giving kind of soliloquy of, like, you know, I'm old now and things are tougher. It's not quite the, like, as good as the this would be a good death speech, but it's up there. It lived up to the hype, man. It's nice. So good.
Nice. That's awesome.
It's, yeah, I absolutely loved it. There's a lot of cool, like, things throughout it. I could go on and on. Like, the thing that gets Steve back into the fray is that there's this news network. It's FNN, and it's Channel 4. And they have a documentary series coming out that claims that the Red Skull was actually fighting against Hitler the whole time, and he's really a hero, and that's what pisses Steve off. He's like, fuck these guys.
That's amazing.
And then Chip in the writing takes some liberties with the world. Like he, it's obviously not our world. It's a parallel one because like soldiers before H-Day still had a secret identity. So they weren't out in the open. And it wasn't until after that they were forced and all this. So yeah, if you're a Marvel Avengers fan, especially a Cap fan, this first issue is awesome. So
nice. Check it out. Awesome.
Yeah. Mike, that was everything I had. So where could people find you on the internet?
You could find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter/X. Where can they find you and or the show? You can
find me on Twitter and most social media networks at Fortress Chris. And you can find the show on Twitter at FortressComics_. Also at FortressComicNews.com. And remember, everybody, best ways to support show, 5-star reviews on the podcatchers, whether it be Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or is it Apple Podcasts now? I forget.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. Or on YouTube, you can like, subscribe, share, comment down below. And then there's patreon.com/FortressComics. Thank you all so much for listening and watching this week. We'll see you here next week.
See ya. Nice.